This interview is being digitally recorded and may be used in evidence should your case be brought to trial. I am TDC 449 Callum Postons, the City London Police. This interview is being conducted in Bishopsgate Police Station. And you're still maintaining that you don't believe that these goods were stolen?
They were not stolen. Are you confirming Sega wanted the items destroyed?
Yes.
They've said this?
Yeah. No filming or producing, yeah?
Okay.
You guys are not locked. You guys are on the camera.
We're in the United Kingdom to investigate a case where the London police, without warning, raided a private citizen's home over game development consoles and cartridges. But this isn't a story about video games. It's about corporate negligence, overreach, and public-private collusion, such as between the police and corporations. It's about alleged theft of trade secrets, intellectual property, and allegations of money laundering. We dug deep, and in their scramble to defend themselves, some of these entities even accidentally sent Gamers Nexus a crisis response plan describing how to respond to Gamers Nexus.
Well, the one, my favorite emails are the ones that say, please delete right after you get sent an email.
Even Nintendo comes up in this story for some strange connections to a private investigator firm. And all along the way, everyone blamed someone else.
Basically, the London police raided a guy over dev kits.
Mm-hmm. Welcome to Sega Europe. Please wait to be connected.
Yes.
Hello.
This is Steve.
Hi.
I just want to have a chat. Ask you a few questions.
Yeah. Come. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Are you okay with camera or not?
No. I don't want you to know.
Hey. You... I'm here as I'm reporting on a story with Darius. Do you know Darius?
Darius, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I did.
Yeah, Darius.
All of this comes back to a man having his home raided by police for buying thrown-away gaming e-waste after Sega hired a junk removal company to throw it all out. The story we're asking about involves a man named Darius Khan.
I was shocked to open the door at 7 o'clock in the morning and see 10 police officers.
Jeez.
And I'm just like, what? Have you got the right address? And then he's like, dev kits. And I'm just like, what? Money laundering? Dev kits? What is going on here? I was like, mate, I bought them in a scrapyard. This is all scrap. Everything you're seeing is scrap that's been thrown away in the UK.
After months of research, witness interviews, and a trip to the UK, we found a circular blame game and widespread stonewalling with all the entities involved, with the smallest entity of all of them, one man on his own, serving as a scapegoat for what our investigation suggests is corporate negligence. There aren't any clean heroes in this story, though. Everyone, including Darius here, have their own flaws. But out of everything, Sega seems to have ultimately pulled the trigger on retaining Nintendo's private investigator firm, Fusion 85, to collaboratively work with the police on a raid of devices that their own waste management partner suggests were negligently discarded by Sega.
If that is not an example of state power of intrusion being delegated to two private companies, I don't know what is.
And the consequences are real for uninvolved people left in the wake of these actions.
Like, that had an impact on me as well.
Mm.
Like, just someone randomly, five cops walking into your bedroom at 7 in the morning when you're completely asleep.
The beginning of this dystopic tale starts with Sega Europe. Sega Europe hired a contractor to clear out its corporate office prior to moving, leaving this mess of e-waste on the floor for a cleanup crew. Per our sources, the instructions were to get rid of all of it. Sega's contractor hired a subcontractor who picked up the old game development kits and cartridges, including some from Nintendo, at Sega's former UK headquarters, some of them containing unreleased code and games. From there, the dev kits ended up with Darius, who scrapes together a living, buying and hoping he can resell the junk that ends up in export yards before it's shipped to Africa for refurb or scrapping.
Yeah, man, I get this stuff all day long. No, it's fine. This is all cool. We can curate the boxes however you want to curate them for the videos.
Like any business, he has some big hits and a lot of misses in the trade. This particular lot from Sega was a hit. It was worth a lot of money. He had it publicly listed, at which point it was reserved by the Video Game Preservation Museum in London, a registered museum, to be sold for £60,000.
Is this the one? Yes, it is.
Okay.
So these are actually Sega cards.
Okay.
Because at the end of the day, history is at stake.
Yeah.
If Sega get these cartridges back, they're just going to destroy them again. Mm-hmm. It's legal to make private copies for museums, mm-hmm. but we're not allowed to share it with you that or the public. Sense. But in many cases, the cartridges are already dumped before they arrive to us, or the consoles are dumped. So we don't actually have to worry about that sort of issue, because it's not on us then.
Okay.
And this was going to be the plan with the cartridges originally.
So this is part of some kind of digital preservation law, I guess. Okay.
Darius has alleged human rights violations during his time in jail, including what he alleges are unlawful durations without food while arrested. Sega alleges theft. The police, at varying points, have alleged everything from money laundering to intellectual property crime. The contractor, through an email accidentally sent to Gamers Nexus, pointed fingers every direction, and as far as Gianna has been able to ascertain, at least one of the subcontractors or middlemen has disappeared from London after the event. Meanwhile, Darius keeps searching for answers. He wants to know specifically why he was arrested and why the dev kits he purchased now sit in an evidence locker. Private entities like Sega, Fusion 85, and Nintendo all sit together on a board in the UK and collaborate with the police openly. Blame often gets pinned on the party we think with the least power, and that's what we're here to investigate. We brought you this investigation with our store at store.gamersaccess.net. For only two more days, our backer tiers for the Kickstarter-style AI Dystopia campaign will be available, at which point we'll close the backer tiers and all the benefits you get from them. Once those close, we'll email out all of the unique wallpaper packs that Andrew made in-house, including a 3D city made out of computer parts, the bonus videos, the last Q&A round with me for the Ghost tier backers, and any remaining orders for physical products. In addition to those, or as part of the backer kits, you can grab our brand new DRAM shortage t-shirts with DRAM cells represented on the back, our limited disappointment build PC t-shirt with all the disappointed products and companies from last year listed on the back, or some of our fully custom products like the highly heat-resistant, flexible silicone soldering and project mats. We made these to have molded-in tool holders, spool holders, screw and part tracking trays, and more, making them great for soldering or any other project that makes a mess. They're available in blue, red, green, yellow, and our new light gray colors. You might also like our copper-plated stainless steel mule mugs, with thermal conductivity represented on the hammered surface. Buying from our store, like our Retro IO coaster packs, directly helps fund expensive investigations that require flying around the world to unearth answers and speak truth to power. Your support of our efforts, like with this documentary and our longer-form tariffs and black market documentaries, mean we can keep doing more of these, including hiring out custom music, like, for example, Aaron Pauly's work from Of Mice and Men, found in this very video. And we can keep hiring real artists and travel because of your support on our store. Head over to store.gamersaccess.net to help out. Let's get back to it. Sega hasn't made a console in decades, so in order to understand why anyone would care enough to collect them as a museum, or why someone would go to jail over the possession of them, we need some history to help set the stage. Sega is a name that's been around in gaming for decades now.
Sega challenges you with the ultimate video game, the Sega Master System.
Sega is famous for Sonic the Hedgehog and for its early consoles. Back in the day, it was the most famous and direct competitor to Nintendo. Back then, Sega took a directly combative approach to advertising.
The Sega Genesis has blast processing. Super Nintendo doesn't. So what's blast processing do?
Sega!
So he gets Sega Genesis, the ultimate action system. And then he buys Mortal Kombat, the arcade edition, and the all-new Shinobi 3, and Marvel's X-Men. Now, things are pretty much okay.
These commercials aired in 1993. It's a lot different from today. Now, the two work together. Sega found mixed success with its consoles in the 90s, allowing it to compete in the first major boom of affordable home gaming in the post-Atari, Commodore, and ColecoVision days of the generation before it. The 90s saw home gaming take off in ways prior decades hadn't, leading to Sega's launch of the SG-1000, the Master System, the Mega Drive, aka Genesis, Game Gear, the Saturn, and the famed Dreamcast. Ultimately though, Sega failed as a hardware manufacturer.
PlayStation 2, the only place to play.
Everybody's like crazy over PlayStation 2, and I gotta get my PS2. And people think, you're showing us Dreamcast, this old stuff. Do I have to like panic if I didn't get my PlayStation 2?
The only reason you might want to panic is if you were really wanting to watch that new DVD you got.
You want a DVD player.
Yeah, but you know what? Circuit City has them on sale right now for 90 bucks. Run out and get one.
So you don't think PS2 is worth all the mania?
No, not really.
And actually, Dreamcast, pretty cool graphics, pretty great action. The online stuff is there. It's a pretty respectable platform.
Its fiscal year 2002 earnings report said that Sega had been, quote, reborn, end quote, announcing its exit from hardware and a new focus on publishing to reduce debt and inventory. The Nintendo 64 and Sony PlayStation set the end in motion for Sega's hardware, sold against the doomed Saturn, despite its best efforts to counter market.
There are lots of good reasons to go with Sega Saturn instead of Nintendo.
There's never been a game like Sega Saturn's Nights. Never, not anywhere. But especially not on that other system. Simply because, with only one processor, it doesn't have the power to do it.
That led to timid users for the Dreamcast, Sega's last console attempt.
Learn to defeat your ruthless enemy, Steve of Hackensack.
While the Dreamcast was desirable for some people, apparently to the point of the headline, quote, knife-wielding maniac stabs to get Dreamcast, end quote, ultimately, the enthusiasm was not universally shared. The Dreamcast went up against Sony's PlayStation 2, listed now as the best-selling console in history.
Welcome to the third place.
Sega ultimately bailed on hardware. It was saved by its founder, actually, who donated over $700 million of his personal wealth in Sega shares back to Sega in order to save it. This history makes it clear why people would value collectible prototypes and test kits. Even Sega today would have NDA hardware from Nintendo, Microsoft, and Sony to make or publish its new games. Damien of the Video Game Preservation Museum was supposed to be the end purchaser of the dev kits and the consoles after they went through a convoluted series of handoffs. Here's the fast version. Sega moved its UK offices last year, left these squalid, gigantic piles of hardware on the floor at its old office, and hired an e-waste contractor called Waste to Wander to clean up the piles. That contractor hired a subcontractor who picked up Sega's designated mess. The subcontractor takes the lot to an export yard that processes waste and sends it mostly to Africa. At the export yard, Darius, aka Don, offers to buy the discarded dev kits and electronics that would have inevitably ended up on eBay anyway, as soon as someone realized they were valuable. The subcontractor and Darius make a deal, and in between them, a third man helps the two to exchange money. VGPM starts raising £61,000 to buy the whole lot. We assume Nintendo's lawyer's ears perk up from halfway around the globe, but we're not sure. And then Sega hires Nintendo's go-to private investigator to allegedly enter Darius's apartment and capture video under the guise of being a purchaser from Facebook Marketplace. And then the police raid Darius, aka Don. And all of this is why it's taken us months to disentangle this complex web of a story. The easiest way to work through the investigation and the evidence we've collected is linearly. To start, we need to talk to Damien to find out why he even wanted these devices. And that small historical diversion led us to this storage unit in England.
Yeah, we'll just kind of keep just rolling general, you know, for now, and then
yeah.
We'll get the mics on.
So our main goal is to preserve video game history, like the prototype games, stuff that's never seen by the public.
Is a lot of this about educational aspects of holding this stuff? Is it
it's more
fascination?
Fascination, education, and the fact that I love history.
Yeah.
You know, I've never really had much of a childhood myself, mm-hmm. so when I finally got a chance to enjoy video games, an obsession.
Yeah, no, that's, I think a lot of people can relate to that. That's cool. Is this how you know Ross Scott is through,
because actually we reached out to him about mm-hmm. the Stop Killing Games movement.
Yeah, because he's the one who told me about this story.
We are registered as a museum, but mm-hmm. obviously we are in a storage unit right yeah. now, which I get a lot of hate for. Mm. But my end up goal would be to get enough funding to actually get this all on display where people can actually come in and use it right. properly.
And you said you've taken it on the road in the past, I guess?
Yes.
It may not have a building yet, but this is the Video Game Preservation Museum as it exists today. VGPM has sometimes rare hardware that it has successfully collected.
So these are the only copies of the source code for Escape from Colditz for, I think it's the Commodore 64.
Wow, okay.
But these are the original floppy disks and the only ones in the world. This Xbox One prototype motherboard. This would be deemed a test kit. They call this the sidecar. These are Sega Saturn games, prototypes. Cool. These are for the Nintendo Wii. Crash and Burn for the PS2. This would be called a Zebra motherboard because it had the black and white stripes.
In some instances, VGPM buys these online like anyone else. In other instances, VGPM buys devices from private sellers after they've been rescued from office clearing events or scrapyards. One of the big things we wanted to learn from Damien, clearly an expert collector of dev kits unintended to be out in the wild, was how these things make it out and what companies do to try and stop it.
So what the companies don't want this stuff out there, but to your knowledge, how do the companies normally try to stop dev kits from getting out?
So that's the fun bit. So with like the Xbox 360, mm-hmm. they'll just normally just format the hard drive and that would be it. It would go in the bin.
Okay.
But with newer stuff and recovery efforts, mm-hmm. like the Xbox One, mm-hmm. what they end up doing is just destroying them. Okay. This was literally in the bin.
Destroyed?
Yeah.
Okay.
The hard drive had actually been hit with a hammer in this
one. Okay, so it's not like they just dismantle it. They actually physically destroy yeah. the stuff. Okay.
And even newer things since then, they've actually started to drill the consoles, mm-hmm. but this console had actually been drilled. Now, with the Xbox Ones, the Blu-ray drive is paired to the console, so mm-hmm. without the ability to update, yeah. the console's bricked.
Right.
In this case, they drilled into the Blu-ray drive.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, they should have drilled over here.
Okay, yeah.
So they actually hit metal, so I managed to restore this, and this is actually fully working now.
Cool.
So this one was for Sega of Europe, Product Development Team, Japan.
Mm.
This was just listed on eBay. We were told it was all legally acquired.
Then at some point, Sega presumably says something about this? Or
no, they never said anything about the Mac. So I know the data from these were released. Mm. I believe that was one that had Sonic Force source code on it.
Just had source code on it?
Yeah, for the iOS port. And
how do the companies, that seems like they should not be letting that go.
They shouldn't. You know, I believe if a company cares about their property, they should at least destroy the hard drive yeah. and then recycle the computer itself. Like, that's a fully usable Mac now.
Right.
So far, all of this information from Damien is great, but we need to know how these two guys met and get to the heart of the story, which is the 60,000 British pound lot of dev kits and cartridges.
Where do you come into the picture here?
Because, I heard that a lot of Sega stuff had come up on eBay.
Yeah.
And we're like, well, do you have anything else? And he's like, yeah, I have cartridges. I have all this stuff here.
Is this Don?
This was Don, yes. Okay.
So that's why when these consoles came in, I thought, okay, huge quantity, all from one place with asset tags, probably all faulty. And the guy told me, yeah, I'm clearing out an office. He had, well, you'll see what else he had. Okay. Tables, yeah. desks, chairs. All of
office furniture.
Just yeah, there was no reason to believe this guy was up to anything dodgy. Have you got that one?
Yeah. So he's clearing out Sega's offices.
Sega's office. Okay. And I thought, wow, this is cool. Just another day at work.
Right.
We then done a fundraiser to uh-huh. secure the carts for 60,000.
Okay.
We raised 5,000 in about a week, I believe mm-hmm. it was. Went down to London to pay in that deposit.
Yeah.
And then he got raided.
Okay.
7 o'clock in the morning, approximately, bang, bang, bang on the door. I look through the peephole and I see a bunch of police, probably four or five police officers. I open the door. Mr. Khan, you're under arrest for money laundering. We're here to seize dev kits, and he's reading it, dev kits and games cartridges. And I'm like, what? And I just bought them from the scrapyard. I open the door, I said, listen, I'll tell you where everything is. No need to mess up anything in my flat. They said, sit there. Everyone walks in and immediately all the police just start They're like worker bees, just came straight in, right, we're taking this, this, they start putting it into evidence bags.
Did the police at any point speak to you?
Nothing. I have had zero contact, and I mean, I've been open.
Yeah.
My contact details are online.
He had an inventory, which I assume was the inventory that I provided to the private investigator. At this point, I had no idea about this private investigator. I didn't understand what was going on. I didn't understand what this had to do with money laundering. Then the police said to me, right, you're under arrest, we have to take you to the police station.
How many cops was it total once you saw
them? I would say approximately 10.
Okay, 1, 2, 10.
That I saw. There were a whole bunch of people who were not uniformed, that were not present initially.
But they just went straight to Don, I guess.
Yeah, they just went straight to Don because obviously he had the cartridges and his colleague did.
Right. So after you do the down payment and he goes silent, what's the next thing you hear about this?
He called me and goes, you're not going to believe this, but I was raided by the police. They've taken everything.
And I assumed at this point the stuff might have been stolen, sold to me, and I'm going to lose my money, I'm going to lose the stuff. But as soon as they realize, oh, I'm a good faith purchaser.
And then that'll be that, I guess.
That'll be it. Yeah. I thought, oh, I'll sit in a cell. It'll be a cool story to tell my friends and my kids one day. Like, I'm a big criminal. Money laundering, right? Yeah. At around 2 o'clock, he said, oh, because you're being held on IP charges. So I sat there and I was like, hang on, I got arrested for money laundering. What's this got to do with IP?
Right.
Nothing was making sense. The way the raid happened didn't make sense.
And we've been in constant communication since, aside from the delay when they'd seized his phone and he couldn't communicate with us.
Right, right. They took his phone too?
I believe they've still got it, actually.
Oh, wow, okay.
I think he's on a different phone now.
Jeez.
So he was like, you know, worst case, you're gonna get a caution. And I was like, so in the UK, a caution is effectively signing something that says, I admit I did this.
I see.
But the police are not gonna take it any further. However,
it seems like something you wouldn't want to sign if you haven't actually done something.
No. What the police try and do is they use a caution where they don't have enough evidence to charge,
right?
But they have to justify.
That seems like that would also give them a paper trail to protect themselves.
Exactly.
Right.
So when the duty solicitor said that to me, I said, no, I'm not taking anything. He said to me, go into that interview and tell them the truth. That was a mistake I made. Not necessarily because it's caused me any problems in the long run, but in terms of legal strategy, it's always better to say nothing to the police. I've learned that since, lesson learned. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, I hadn't done anything wrong. I knew my intentions were clean, and I knew the stuff wasn't stolen. So I thought, what's the harm in just clarifying everything, letting them know the full story, and then they'll realize, oh, cool, we let him out. He's not the guy you want. We sit down in the interview, and it's freezing in the interview. I didn't have a jacket, I only had a t-shirt. I know deliberately they must have turned the AC on to make me feel as uncomfortable as possible. They even made reference to the fact that, oh, you must be very thirsty. Knowing full well, I had not had a full meal. I had not been offered a meal in all the time that I was in custody.
How long was it at this point?
Conveniently, there's no clocks anywhere in the police
station. They don't know.
They don't, yes. I mean, it's some kind of sensory deprivation, I reckon.
Yeah.
But I would say, you know, arrested at 7, 7.30-ish, in the police station by 8.39, and the interview was around 4.40, 5 o'clock. So it was a fair few hours. I hadn't eaten anything. I just had a little bit of orange juice and water in a breakfast bar, which is a breach of pace because I was supposed to have been offered a full meal.
It does seem like an overreach.
Yeah. I think it's really overboard in what they've done.
And it almost feels like police sort of executing on behalf of the private company without.
And that's what the warrant actually sounds like.
Yeah.
I mean, the ordering of the numbering on the warrant was all messed up.
In the UK, we have, and I've had to learn all of this myself. I have been left with an occupier's copy.
Okay,
definitely want this on the camera. This is unbelievable.
This is occupier's copy.
They're exactly the same, except that says occupier's copy.
And yours says?
This one says applicant's copy. In every single case of me and the three warrants from my business partner, they've left us with both the applicant's copy and the occupier's copy. In my business partner's office, the applicant's copy says units, say 13 and 14, blah, blah, blah house. Mm. That's his building. The occupier's copy says just the name of the building.
Okay.
So the entire scope of the raid was changed between what the judge saw. So the judge should see the applicant's copy, but the applicant's copy should be identical to the occupier's copy. But in this case, the judge was told two units in this building. Someone then changed
it. But the occupier was told this building.
Yes. I mean, look, it's gone from we can search one small room in this building to we have the authority to search anything. Well, what you'll see is that the section, persons authorized by me to execute this warrant, section 12. In the draft notes, section 12, enter as appropriate constable of named police force, any police constable, or officer of named authority. Mm-hmm. None of those suggest that you're allowed to put two private companies in there.
Right.
So that's kind of like telling, isn't it?
What are the, it lists Fusion 85 and Sega?
And investigators from Fusion 85, representatives from Sega.
At this point, we'd received emails confirming pieces of Darius's story. For instance, we had independently collected our own evidence that Sega hired Ways to Wonder to clear its offices, and we confirmed Darius's claims that Ways to Wonder subcontracted the work to the man who sold him the items at the scrapyard. We also reviewed evidence and video collected from within Sega's office proving that the devices seized from Darius actually were in the pile of scrap being disposed of at Sega's HQ. So in other words, Darius was arrested for buying garbage. And we'll come back to this critical piece of evidence that GN exclusively obtained later and that the police don't know we have, but well, didn't until now. The pieces are slowly starting to come together of this complicated story. But now what we need to understand is how the scrapyards operate so that we can understand the full chain of custody of items disposed of during contracted office clearing events like Sega's.
So everything I sell comes from scrap recycling, house clearances, and would otherwise have been destroyed. And then we take it, we put it back into the circular economy. Right, this is how it works. Sam's yard is a yard with loads of shipping containers and loads of guys who rent containers either for storage or to fill up a container. And once it's filled, it gets shipped to anywhere in the world that you want it to.
Okay.
Mostly Africa. It's almost entirely West and East Africans. There's also a bunch of guys there who sit there all day long, and they have customers who go around picking up scrap, clearances, whatever. They'll drive in, unload whatever interesting stuff they have. These guys buy it. And we're talking pennies, man. We're talking like, for example, like a stack like that there.
Yeah.
They'll pay £6, maybe £10.
If
you're lucky, they'll pay a tenner for that. I'll come in and be like, there's 50 quid for it. And then I'll go and sell it on for hundreds. So that's how my business works. But the guys who bring it in are driving around, they're getting paid to clear it, they're literally just picking up off the streets. It's just rubbish to them.
And it's these places that turn garbage into gold. The first stop, Darius's storage yard for his scrap intake.
Yeah, man, I get this stuff all day long. No, no, it's fine. Right, this is all cool water. We can curate the boxes however you want to curate them for the video. This is all that stuff. There's crates full of this, you know, in the video of all the cables. All marked it, marked Sega. Sega of America. Oh, I found that the other day, yeah. So this box contains the stuff that was on the floor in the video that contained also the games cartridges that were seized. Yeah. Sega, confidential property of Nintendo. We've got brand new Wii discs. We've got
HTC Vive controller.
Marked Sega clearly with the QR. PlayStation 5, control panel boxes. They didn't take those. We have got...
So this is all stuff you had at the time of the raid?
Yeah, this all came with the consoles. That's a
But they didn't take any of this?
They didn't. They came here, they opened the gate, they didn't take a single item.
Wow.
There's almost 10 crates full of these items. This is an Xbox.
Why do you think they didn't take it?
Because they have no commercial value.
Okay.
That's why.
Yeah.
PlayStation controller, clearly marked Sega. So, you know, if this stuff was stolen, another one marked Sega, why didn't they take it?
Right.
That's what this all comes down to. Not for retail sale. That's a prototype Kinect 360. We've got... What else do we have? Yeah, even the HDMI cables that were marked Sega of Europe. Another one of those marked Sega. The controller marked Sega. Sega of America. I think that's a Nintendo Wii something. Clearly Sega. Sega of Europe. They didn't want these. And it was random because there was even stuff like Mega Drive cables in there as well. but there was no Mega Drives.
So all the stuff you buy at scrap yards, I guess?
Everything here has come from scrap yards. Everything I buy and sell is I test it, and if it doesn't work, it gets resold as or parts.
Yeah.
So all of this stuff here has been tested. It has a fault, so it's being sold either just for the case to build a sleeper build. Perhaps someone wants some parts, whatever right. The computer guys decide to do with them, even just as props. A lot of this stuff here will be sold as a prop to a film company. That is, believe it or not, $2,500 on eBay. It's a laser engraver.
Oh.
And it was manufactured in 2022.
Cool.
Probably sat in a school, was never used. The school threw it out, and now I've got it.
Wow. Okay.
It's just a waste. It's just such a terrible waste.
And it ended up in a scrapyard.
It was literally, I've got the picture of it thrown in the pile. So the deal I have with the scrapyard is that I take the stuff for free, I sell it, and I give the owner, because he's my friend, I give him half, he trusts me.
Okay.
But generally, if I bought that from one of the contacts I buy, I wouldn't pay more than maybe £30.
Got it. Wow.
Working, not working, completely untested as you see it.
So you buy it as seen, and then
as scrap.
It's up to you to figure
yeah.
out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if it doesn't work, you take on all the risk.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
In this case, if it's £30, not a big risk,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, so I mean, like recently I threw away a full van of stuff that I paid money for, but it was just sitting here, let it go.
Right.
You win, you lose. That's business.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's some really cool stuff. Like under there is a piece of test equipment for a Black Hawk helicopter. Thing on the bottom with the MOD tag on it is actually to do with calibrating the blades on a Black Hawk helicopter.
Okay.
And like it has no value at all. Like who the hell is going to want that? Except someone like me who's like, wow, that looks amazing. Like look at those Limo connectors. The green thing there is a radio from communications radio from a tank.
And then is this Sega here?
That is, yes, that's a very random Mega Drive Mini. This came from a scrapyard, and you can tell because they didn't even bother to unplug the USB. They just cut the cable off.
Okay.
They don't care. I think you've got that. But yeah, like, you know, I'm into electronics and stuff like potentiometers and things like that. It's gold, it's absolute gold. We've got a load of tantalum, old school like Sprague tantalum capacitors.
All right.
Just nerd stuff, really.
Cool.
So amongst all of this stuff was a whole load. There was a lot more of these Xbox.
Sega of Europe, sidecars for Xbox.
Sidecars. Yeah, so every single one has been drilled.
Right.
Which proves all of the stuff was to be disposed of.
It was willfully destroyed.
It was disposal stuff.
Yeah.
And it also confirms why they didn't seize it, because it was just rubbish to them. So the question is, how did those games cartridges get seized when they were part of this lot?
Right.
And as we've seen on Sega's side, the cartridges were mixed in with this stuff, which would suggest negligence on Sega's part. If they wanted those cartridges, why were they mixed in with the stuff that was going to be destroyed?
Yeah.
Sounds like they didn't want them. They considered it all rubbish.
He brings up a good point. Sega says they wanted the items back because they were stolen. But then Sega threw out the items alongside other items that were clearly intentionally destroyed. So it seems that police resources are being used to investigate someone for buying literal garbage for a party who was authorized to remove said garbage. If this is how it worked out, at best, Sega might have a claim against their contractor, Waste to Wonder, and their contractor's subcontractor, if they had an agreement in place saying that the garbage was not to be resold or distributed to anyone. But after reviewing all of the evidence, we just don't see how the blame lands on someone buying the garbage. Again, at most, it's the liability of the contractor removing it, or the negligence of Sega not ensuring it was removed in the specific way they wanted it removed. So then, the next thing we need to see is the kind of place that these e-waste companies are sending e-waste to. Darius took us to one of his scrap yards to see how the deals are actually made.
What's up, dude?
Hey, you alright?
Yes, sir. Are you for me? I say everyone knows. Yeah, third world. Proper third world. I love it. Absolutely love it. No health and safety, it's every man for himself.
Right.
Okay, stop! Change it up again.
You have everything from TVs to like equipment like that,
right.
Ladders, everything.
then it all gets loaded into containers like this.
Right.
And it will all just get packed in fridges. You can see it there, how they're loading it. And that gets picked up and it will be sent to Ghana, Nigeria, Tanzania, whichever country.
Okay,
See
the
bike. It's in the container. Austin, what's happening?
Hello.
It's my friend from America. Yeah. Oh, Austin,
you're alright?
Yeah. Yeah. Just showing him the business. Yeah. This is all scrap. Everything you're seeing is scrap that's been thrown away in the UK.
So the cars mostly end up going to Africa?
Almost
primarily?
99.9% of the stuff that comes into these yards goes to Africa.
Okay.
And I'm the 0.1% that takes it out and sells it myself and it could go anywhere.
Right.
But yeah, bicycles, motorbikes, even old mattresses are useful. You know, they clean them out, rugs.
Right.
Stuff that to us is just like, we'll just chuck it out, we don't care about it. Absolute gold, guys. That's an incinerator. A lot of the waste from London goes there to be burnt. And I think they turn it into power.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting.
Oh, is there an air on?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's still 100 quid, and I'll give him a fiver for it. I've got a buyer for it straight away. So, like, you know, the police tried to argue I needed the money and I was buying stolen stuff because I needed the money. I don't need the money. Like, I can make money just like that, you know? That's something in the rubbish. And I've got a customer for it. I'll send him a picture and he'll give me £100 for it straight away.
And you maybe do you replace the armrest or anything?
No. I don't have the time for that.
Just okay.
Sell it as it is, take pictures.
Let them deal with it.
Let him deal with it.
Okay.
This is typical, this is gold for Africa, effectively. You know, Samsung washing machines, whether they work or not, it doesn't matter. Power tools, chairs, all of this stuff is worth a fortune. once they ship this stuff out. I need it. But I'm not in my car. I'm just with my friend. You come from America. We came in a taxi. Can you put it in the side? And when I come tomorrow, I give you it's £5. It's fine. My brother, I have to make money, it's £5.
How much did you make with that one?
No, you know I put it in my sister's house. She said I'm taking it. I didn't make nothing. Display. It's scrap. It was scrap. Listen, put the chair. Just keep the chair for me tomorrow, yeah? Please. Thank you so much. Fans literally drive in and they have stuff that they picked up from scrap. So this is exactly how I bought the consoles. Guy turned up in the van. He had loads of office furniture, and he had boxes of consoles.
These are the types of yards Darius frequents, and it's good background information. It's interesting even just as a video on its own. But next, we needed to strike out on our own to visit the scrapyard Darius actually bought the items at and corroborate his story without his presence. That's what we did next, and we dug up the name of a man who'd know everything at the yard.
The dogs, man. Jeez. Hey, I'm here as I'm reporting on a story with Darius. Do you know Darius?
Darius, okay.
Yeah.
But all I know is the guy come here. He bought it here, so.
Right. Did the police ever give you guys any trouble with that?
No.
Okay. So it's really just between him and them, I guess.
We never ever see it.
Yeah.
So one of the container holders, something to do with him. They've met him, and that was that. Well, this is a scrapyard. This is where things get recycled and get sent out of the country. So, what comes in here, we've got control of most things.
Right.
But anything like that, you would never see.
Yeah. Do people normally even know what the stuff is that comes in? I mean, like a development kit just looks like a normal electronic,
No. I only figured out, I've been here for 10 years.
Yeah.
I only found out the other day that there's a PS2.
Mm.
If the one with four USBs, it's the one what resets all the other. I didn't know that. You learn these, and I like retro gaming.
Right.
I like the Super Nintendo, you know?
Yeah.
I was never a Sega guy. But other than that, we don't really know what was going on. Please never contact us. that's to do with him.
Right.
What I heard him say to me, that the police had all the statements from him and the other guy.
Right.
That was down to them, it's not our business.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know if it was stolen or someone threw it away. Or
the current story is that Sega hired a company to clear out their old office before they moved.
That's what it is. So we get a lot of that. We recycle, so we send it in the national. So you can send recycled stuff. Usually in England, if you buy a toaster and you don't go home and it ain't right, this day and age, you take it back to Tesco's, they won't repair it. So Tesco's, we've got a contract with these people, so Tesco's then put it on a pallet, and then when they've got enough, they send it to one of these guys.
Okay.
And then they ship it international, because they've either got a choice, scrap metal, or sell it international.
Fix it and sell
it. 20 years ago, when I was growing up, you always had a corner shop, some little old guy sold you. I used to love the smell, you know, when you... you know, but you don't get that no more. We're at an age where if it doesn't work, throw it away.
Buy no one,
Darius, when he told me to start, because I didn't know.
Yeah.
Usually he picks up guitars.
Yeah.
That's what he really comes here for, guitars. Mm. Because a lot of people buy guitars, and when they're finished, I'm not a policeman.
And I
speak to the police every day to check the cars.
Right.
Basically, I think what's happened, that one of the guys who come here, have gone in there, told someone else, they've told that guy, because he buys like that stuff, and that's how it's coming light.
Right, okay, got it.
Over our ensuing days in England, we verified a lot of Darius's claims. We spoke to scrapyard staff. We spoke to Darius's roommate.
And then at some point I had to come back to get my laptop. And so I came back to grab it. And when I came back, that's when I saw there was the police officers in here and putting the consoles in the bags. And then there was other people that were not wearing police uniforms. I don't know who they were.
We spoke to the doorman at the apartment complex.
Yes. Hello. This is Steve.
Hi. Hi.
I just want to have a chat and ask you a few questions.
Yeah,
just
come, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Are you okay with camera or not?
No, I don't want you to know.
Who confirmed that there was a police raid with 10 to 15 officers. And at this point, all that remained was to visit Sega, Nintendo, and the police. So, we got in a car and traveled over an hour to Windsor, the very same name shared with the castle. If you've ever wondered if Nintendo's business is doing okay, you should know that their England office is about 10 steps away from a castle built around the year 1070. Legend has it that William the Conqueror himself bequeathed the office building across the street to Nintendo's lawyers, who of course have unlocked the secret to eternal life, its lawsuits. The short version of these next three attempts at conversations is...
No filming or producing, yeah?
Okay.
Get on the lock. Get on the camera.
You guys are able to provide any on or off record, commentary on it?
No.
Yeah, are you recording?
We do have a camera, yeah.
Is it running
now? It is running.
I just don't understand why you're recording now.
Sega didn't want to talk to us, something they later reinforced in an email. Nintendo staff on site were uninformed on the matter, which isn't their fault, and Nintendo corporate PR didn't respond to our email prior to publication. The police front desk was unhelpful.
I want to know the name of
that we're asking about?
Yeah.
For the police or for...
Who is it that you want to speak to?
Calvin Postance or Ben Hobbs.
I don't know.
They should be part of the... I know you have two...
I'm trying to find that out now, I'm not sure.
So even across the pond, some things feel familiar. So we emailed them after getting home. They told us to give them a call, and we did.
Messaging service. The person you are calling is unable to take your call. Please leave your message after the tone.
No one answered. We left a message, emailed a series of questions, they ignored most of them, and they responded with the basics. Quote, we can confirm that an investigation is currently ongoing in relation to the alleged possession of criminal property. Three people have been arrested and four interviewed voluntarily in connection with the matter. They were all released under investigation pending further inquiries. We've received a complaint in relation to the investigation, which is currently being reviewed. It would not be appropriate to comment further at this time. Please note, this warrant was executed by police alone. No third parties were involved, end quote. First of all, as for the three parties, Darius was one of them, his business partner was the other, and then a third party related to transacting the actual purchase of the consoles was the other one arrested. As for the warrant being executed by police alone and no third parties being involved, we do have reason to believe that private investigators minimally, entered Darius Khan's home separately and in relation to the sale of the Sega kits. That seems to be how the police got their inventory of what was in the home. Interestingly, in an email to Darius from the police obtained by GN, the police stated to Darius, quote, "You have said that four warrants were executed on 14th July 2025. The warrants allowed employees of Sega and their private investigators to enter your home with the police officers," end quote. Now, if you read the rest of this email, it's poor wording on their part in that second sentence. Given the rest of the contents of the email, we think they're recapping what Darius's complaint said, meaning he claimed this, not stating that employees were actually allowed to enter his home. However, the plain English interpretation does read that way. So this plain English interpretation of that sentence, in combination with the plainclothes officers who entered the home, at least from what we understand them to be, would explain why Darius is fairly certain that Sega entered the home with the police, in addition to the confusing way they were listed on the warrant. But the confusing representation of these things, in addition to trying to pin what we think is corporate negligence onto a guy who bought garbage at a scrapyard, is probably why it's not clear to Darius what the fuck is actually going on. So after all these conversations, we were left to try and prove what happened on our own. With all of our months of evidence filled in now, here's a flashback rewind of everything. In April, Sega Europe moved from its former office to Chesek Business Park. Recycling organization Waste to Wonder cleared out Sega Europe's abandoned offices. Waste to Wonder's email mistakenly sent to us when planning its crisis response, which up until they sent it seemed totally unnecessary since it wasn't a crisis, but now it kind of is, revealed a lot of important details. We want to be clear that while we respect the stated mission of the organization, the email is filled with what we feel to be cover-your-ass statements, like focusing on protecting the relationship with Sega. We've informed the organization that we are under absolutely no obligation to keep this off record, since one, we asked them for a comment and this is what they accidentally sent to us, and two, it effectively acquits a man we believe to be wrongfully accused of theft. Here's what it states. Waste to Wonder was hired by Sega Europe Limited. They used a long-standing subcontractor. The police claim items were stolen in the process. But then it gets into some comments that, from what we've seen, maybe aren't factual, maybe useful spin, or maybe Sega misrepresented reality to Waste to Wonder. It claims the room was out of scope, which we haven't found any evidence for. It claims the subcontractor's staff stole items in a criminal act without Waste to Wonder's knowledge. First of all, as far as we can tell, the subcontractor was told by Waste to Wonder and or Sega to simply take everything, which wouldn't be theft. Despite the obvious pile of techno shit in the middle of the floor, our opinion is that Sega misrepresented this to police as theft from another room. Secondly, since this is Waste to Wonder's own email stating that subcontractor staff stole or allegedly stole items, that would in and of itself immediately clear Darius Khan of any direct theft of his own. Purchasing goods, in good faith, without knowing they were stolen, is not money laundering, nor is it an IP crime. Nor is it creation or possession of counterfeit goods, which was another of the many shape-shifting changes that London police levied at Darius Khan as their narrative mutated over the months. At best, he may have been unknowingly in possession of stolen property, at which point they would take it back and go after the thief. If that's even true, and we don't think it is, this would be no different than if you bought a PlayStation dev kit from a pawn shop that was, unbeknownst to you, in possession of a stolen PlayStation dev kit, and then the police raided your house the next day, arrested you, starved you in their custody for a day, coerced you to voluntarily forfeit the item without any proof of being stolen, seized and invasively searched your phone and phone records, and caused mental anguish for the next 8 months of your life. And that's assuming the goods were even stolen, wherein the subcontractor and contractor are at fault. However, again, we can't find a shred of evidence to suggest even that is true. It seems Sega told Waste to Wonder and the subcontractors to just take all of it, which points back to Sega as negligence. And then Sega had multiple contractors because they also hired a company called ITR Secure to remove intellectual property equipment, servers, and dev kits. So if Sega had multiple firms to clear out its offices, and if they had such valuable items, we have to question why Sega wouldn't have properly managed its subcontractors while they were removing sensitive items, such as by having someone on site to monitor them. Let's return to the Waste to Wonder crisis response anchor of events we have. A sample statement reads, quote, "We are aware of allegations that development hardware was removed and sold following an office relocation for one of our clients. We engaged a long-standing subcontractor to carry out the removal and clearance work. work, and at no time were we aware that the hardware in question was present in the area of the job we managed. We were cooperating fully with law enforcement and conducting our own internal review. We regret the distress this matter has caused and will update further once our review is complete," end quote. Again, that's a sample statement. Unlike usually when we have to perform interpretive dance for the PR gods, we don't have to interpret what their true meaning was here. They told us, by accident, quote, "to show transparency, acknowledge the matter, express concern, commit to cooperation and investigation, without admitting liability or making speculative claims," end quote. The crisis document goes on to further state that Waste to Wonder would review the chain of custody and scope of work for its contractor, its insurance policies, and would ask the subcontractor for what items were removed. It says to investigate whether it was client inventory control negligence by Sega. It also says that IP risk may involve Nintendo, which typically asserts perpetual ownership over its dev kits, and talks about preparing for lawsuits. The document also provides some take-home key messages, throwing the subcontractor under the bus. But in all of that, curiously, never Darius. They state the action, quote, "appears to be a criminal act by an individual subcontractor operative," end quote, but never naming Darius or external third-party buyers. It talks about commitment to ethics. The document advises not blaming Sega publicly, then offers some means to smooth things over with Sega. It talks about training its staff to not steal things, always a good lesson to learn, and not things consistent with blaming a random outsider for alleged theft when they bought something. Finally, the document advises Waste to Wonder to leverage the environmental, social, and governance goodwill of recycling e-waste and the social capital of social impact to restore or protect its reputation. We'll skim the rest of this, but it goes on and on for pages, describing yet more training and two-factor custody validation for items. Again, not consistent with Sega blaming an outsider for theft. It suggests more complete insurance for negligence, proving the group can be trusted and lessons were learned. In the final section, the document outlines their version of the facts again. Quote, "avoid making any statement that you approved or knowingly disposed of the dev kit. Instead, frame it as the subcontractor's alleged criminal act," end quote. And, quote, "be careful not to shift blame entirely to the client, Sega. That could damage client relationship and looks defensive," end quote. In a risk mitigation table, the e-waste organization notes one more set of considerations. As for the police at times write their responses in absolutes, we think, as if they've already determined that the items were stolen, rather than simply disposed of or questioning Sega's story. And at times, as if Darius is already convicted of theft, when there hasn't even been a trial yet. Gamers Nexus obtained through sources a one-hour recording of the police interview from inside the police station. You can hear how the police try to pin knowledge of stolen property on Darius.
What happens after that?
What do you mean, what happens after that?
So, does he pay you the money?
You should know.
I do know.
Why are you asking?
Just want to see what you say.
No comment.
So he sent $5,000. So, what we've got here now, so he's paid £5,000 for stolen goods.
That you allege to be stolen.
Which generates the proceeds of crime. So that £5,000 is technically criminal property.
If you can prove they're stolen.
In many cases, possession of IP would mostly be an issue of breaching an NDA, like Sega's with Nintendo's. Gamers Nexus obtained one of Nintendo's United Kingdom developer NDAs that covers development kits. Under the section Restrictions, Nintendo states that developers, quote, "will not directly or indirectly reverse engineer development kits," end quote, and likewise, its ownership of materials section states, quote, "materials are the property of Nintendo or its licensors and are protected under applicable intellectual property laws," end quote. But Darius isn't under this NDA because he's not a developer. Likewise, in the event of a breach of the NDA, it's likely that this would be a civil matter rather than a criminal one. It becomes a criminal matter because Darius is being accused of benefiting from the proceeds of a crime, or at times, possession of counterfeit property. Our understanding is that this converts the IP civil issue into a criminal issue by inserting words like counterfeit. The police also effectively told Darius to stop emailing them. After receiving an email from Darius, a supervisor wrote, quote, "DC Postens forwarded me your last email. Should you have any further requests, please send them directly to me and not DC Postens, who I have now instructed not to reply to your emails. I shall simplify